We've heard
Kapila Dev, Kapila Muni, who is Bhagawan, the Supreme Lord. We've heard him explain to Devahuti the process of Astanga Yoga. He's actually explaining the process of Sankhya. There are two different Kapila Devs in Indian history. One of them is this Kapila Dev, the son of Devahuti, and the other, as Prabhupada would call him, an imposter Kapila Dev. And this imposter Kapila Dev, he was a teacher also of Sankhya philosophy, but a different Sankhya that was atheistical, that the 24 elements are there, and then when they are taken apart, when the material world is deconstructed of and brought down into its form, or understood in its form of the 20 of the elements, when one by one they're removed, there is nothing left. There is no Supreme Lord, there is no Supreme Cause, nothing. That is the imposter Kapila Dev, also dealing with something like Sankhya. Because Sankhya just means counting the elements. So the ultimate element, when one listens to the philosophy taught by the Lord, Bhagawan Kapila Dev, the ultimate element is the Lord himself. The soul is there, and then there is the super soul. And that super soul, or Krishna as he is manifested within the heart, he is the ultimate substance of this world. Vistavyaham idam kritsnam ekam senastito jagat. Because of that substance, because of Krishna, everything else exists. We heard this point when the universal form was described, how the universal form, or the Virata Rupa, the Purusha, existed. The documentation, so to speak, of the material world existed. But it had no consciousness. The Virata Rupa had no consciousness until the super soul existed, until the consciousness, or the Lord entered himself. So everything, everyone is fully dependent on Krishna, even the material elements. And very proudly we think of ourselves independent of Krishna. And this is our basic disease, the disease that keeps us in the hospital of the material world trying to become cured. We think ourselves independent of Krishna. Krishna is the Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Savaloka Maheshwaram. He is the enjoyer, he is the controller, he is the Suridam Savabhutanam, he is the true ultimate friend of every living entity. And we usurp those positions. We tend, or the conditioned souls want to usurp those positions for themselves. I am the enjoyer, I'm the controller. Everyone should look to me for their friendship. So because of that mentality, we are in the material world, and we have to learn to turn that around, turn to Krishna. And that's the process of Sankhya. And the way that Sankhya is taught, the essence or the basis of it ultimately is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, hearing about Krishna. Kapila Muni has explained this to his mother. This is the essence. And that will transfer our attachment and attraction for the realm of matter. It will transfer it from the material world to the spiritual world, to Krishna, through attraction to sadhus who speak Krishna Katha. And then Kapila Muni described the breakup, the elements that the material world is composed of, by describing the creation, how it emanates from ultimately Karanadaksha Vishnu, and the creation was described from the subtle to the gross. And then he Then Devahuti asked him, how can the soul actually become extracted? It has been within these material elements ever since forever, practically speaking, and there's such an attraction. How can he get out? And we see this. Every time we try to get out, it is as if we come to the... Every time we vow and say, from now on I'm going to remember Krishna and I'm only going to think about Krishna and I'm going to give up all... I know that material desires of sense enjoyment, trying to fulfill them won't make me happy. But it is like we are chained. Practically we are chained. So how to get free from this? This is her question. And we already heard the answer that we heard that when we heard the process of yoga yesterday. This Ishwara Panidhanat, the Yoga Sutras say that we should surrender to that Ishwara. And the purpose of all the yoga that he is explaining, that Kapila Muni is explaining, is Chitta Vritti Naroda, the controlling of that mind, so it can be extricated, pulled back from that tendency, such a deep tendency to exploit the material energy and focus it on Krishna. That is the purpose of yoga. So in this chapter, in chapter 28, Kapila Muni replies to Devahuti's question. He begins the practical explanation of his reply to Devahuti's question of how can we actually become extricated from the entanglement with Maya, matter. And his reply was through devotional service. And he had already said, focusing on the super soul, focusing on Krishna. So then we heard yesterday, in 11 or 12 verses, we heard that process of Astanga Yoga, whose goal is to focus the mind in full focus, samadhi, fixed attention, unwavering fixed attention. That's the Chitta Vritti Narodha. Stop the fluctuations of the mind. Stop the rejections and the acceptances of the mind continuously. I want this, I don't want that. Just stop it. Pull it from the realm of matter and train that very same mind to focus exclusively on the Lord. And the Lord, Krishna, within the heart, is truly worthy of focusing on. And if we actually learn to control the mind and focus, then and only then will the mind, the body, the senses, and ultimately ourselves, the soul, actually experience full satisfaction. So that is the process of yoga, the mechanical process of doing this, and how, and we heard also how the benefits that one attains from the practices of yoga, and there are very many, they are all ultimately fulfilled in a direct way through the process of bhakti. And again, the only purpose, the ultimate purpose of the yoga, of practicing yoga, and yoga literally means to yoke or to connect, is to make that connection with Krishna so that the mind can be focused upon him. So in this section that we're going to read tonight, we're going to hear there are two parts of this section really. One part is when the mind is purified on that yoga, by yoga, we hear what we should concentrate upon. And then Kapila Muni will explain the process of that meditation or how one should view that form of the Lord. Those are basically the two parts that we'll hear today. So the first verse we'll read is 12. Yada manasram virajam yogena sushamahitam kashtam bhagavato dhyayat. Kashtam bhagavato dhyayat, dhyayam, dhyayat. We should meditate upon that plenary expansion, Kashtam Bhagavata, that plenary expansion, or the super soul who's within everyone's heart. Kashtam Bhagavato Dhyayat, focusing the mind, learn to fully control the mind, fix one's full, the torchlight of one's consciousness, focused exclusively upon the Lord who is within the heart. And just fill up our consciousness with Him. Svanasa gravo lokana. When the mind is perfectly purified by this practice of yoga, one should concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed eyes and see the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, from the next verses, from seven verses from 13 to 19, describe that form that one will look upon. And what we'll do is, because we're going to hear just descriptions in this section that we'll read today, so we'll read all the descriptions and try to become attracted to this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Lord. Think of what He looks like. And we'll hear some of Prabhupada's purports, which are very beautiful too. So to help us in our meditation, of course there are pictures everywhere of Krishna. I've brought one favorite picture of Krishna. So we can look at one of these pictures and just see how beautiful he actually is. There. He's very, 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 very beautiful. He's called Murli Manohar, one who enchants the mind by playing his flute. So the description is said to be the super soul. That's what it is. But the focus of the mind on Murli Manohar, Shyamasunda, is actually the perfection of all yoga. It's madgatein antarakmanam sadavan bhajate yomam samayuktatamamata. Tech or what? I can't remember anymore. Oh yes, it not only found something in a shop, they found that poster. And they brought it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada quoted a verse by Rupa Goswami that he included in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu that said, don't go and see Govinda. Because this picture was so beautiful, it reminded Prabhupada of this verse. Don't go and see Govinda, who is, if you have attachment to family, to material life in general, to your wealth, don't go and see Govinda, who is standing by the Yamuna River at Vamsivat and playing his flute. Because if you go and see him, which this part isn't in the verse, but this is the implication. Because if you go and see him, he is so charming and so sweet looking. He will capture your heart and steal it away from your materialistic attachments. He will attract your heart so far from your material attachments that you will lose everything material. So if you're attached to these things and you want to maintain those attachments, don't go and see Govinda, because he is so charming. So here is the first element of the description. So if one should meditate, and Prabhupada in these purports, he explains many times, these show that the Supreme is not impersonal. One shouldn't meditate on the impersonal because the Supreme isn't impersonal. He's a person and the most attractive person, the all-attractive person. So what will one see when one meditates, when one learns finally after many lives possibly, one learns to focus his consciousness, focus his mind, what will one see? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. We'll have to see with our eyes, our ears right now. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a cheerful, lotus-like countenance with ruddy eyes like the interior of a lotus and a swarthy body like the petals of a blue lotus. He bears a conch, discus, and mace in three of his hands. His color, his skin color is swarthy, darkish, bluish. And his eyes are like a lotus petal, lotus flower, the petals of a lotus flower. His loins, his limbs, are covered, his legs and thighs are covered by a shining cloth, yellowish like the filament of a lotus. Also, sometimes Krishna's dhoti is compared in color to the flash of lightning. So effulgent. On his breast, he bears the mark of Srivats, a curl of white hair. The brilliant Kastova gem is suspended from his neck. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The exact color of the garment of the Supreme Lord is described as saffron yellow, just like the pollen of a lotus flower. The Kastova gem hanging on his chest is also described. His neck is beautifully decorated with jewels and pearls. The Lord is full in six opulences, one of which is wealth. He is very richly dressed with valuable jewels which are not visible within this material world. Text 15. He also wears around his neck a garland of attractive sylvan flowers, of forest flowers, and a swarm of bees, intoxicated by its delicious fragrance, hums about that garland. He is further superbly adorned with a pearl necklace, a crown, and a pair of armlets, bracelets, and anklets. His loins and hips are encircled by a girdle. He stands on the lotus of his devotee's heart. He is most charming to look at, and his serene aspect gladdens the eyes and souls of the devotees who behold him. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word dashani yatamam, which is used in this verse, means that the Lord is so beautiful that the devotee yogi does not wish to see anything else. His desire to see beautiful objects is completely satisfied by the sight of the Lord. In the material world, we want to see beauty, but the desire is never satisfied. Because of material contamination, all the propensities we feel in the material world are ever unsatisfied. But when our desire to see, hear, touch, etc., are dovetailed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are on the level of the topmost perfection. Text 17. The Lord is eternally very beautiful, and he is worshipable by all the inhabitants of every planet. He is ever youthful and always eager to bestow his blessings upon his devotees. From Prabhupada's purport. The Lord's facial expression always indicates that he is ready to show favor and benediction to the devotees. For the non-devotees, however, he is silent. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, although he acts equally to everyone because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because all living entities are his sons, he is especially inclined to those engaged in devotional service. The same fact is confirmed here. He is always anxious to show favor to the devotees. Just as the devotees are always eager to render service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord is also very eager to bestow benedictions upon the pure devotees. Text 18. The glory of the Lord is always worth singing. For his glories enhance the glories of his devotees. One should therefore meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead and upon his devotees. One should meditate on the eternal form of the Lord until the mind becomes fixed. So this very much is the process of fixing and controlling the mind. Become attracted to that the beauty of Krishna. Every aspect of Krishna's transcendental body is beautiful. Purport. One has to fix his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. When one is accustomed to thinking of the innumerable forms of the Lord, Krishna, Vishnu, Rama, Narayana, etc., he has reached the perfection of yoga. This is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. A person who has developed pure love for the Lord and whose eyes are smeared with the ointment of transcendental loving exchange always sees within his heart the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The devotees especially see the Lord in the beautiful blackish form of Shyamasunda. That is the perfection of yoga. This yoga system should be continued until the mind does not vacillate for a moment. What does that mean? What does it mean? What is this perfection of yoga? One should continue it until the mind does not flicker, even for a moment, from its focus upon the beauty and form and qualities and pastimes of the Lord. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashanti Surya. The form of Vishnu is the highest individuality and is always visible to sages and saintly persons. The same purpose is served when a devotee worships the form of the Lord in the temple. There is no difference between devotional service in the temple and meditation on the form of the Lord, since the form of the Lord is the same whether he appears within the mind or some concrete element. So, this point is one that Prabhupada brings up many times within these purports. He brings up this point about impersonalism, kicking the impersonalist conception that the Lord has no form, and also this point that the Lord, if we meditate upon him within the heart, which takes thousands of years of yoga practice, or if we look at the beautiful form of the Lord in the temple, or even a wonderful, wonderful picture of the Lord, it is the same. But this is so much easier. So therefore, the Archa Vigraha, or the deity of the Lord, is Krishna's mercy, that he manifests his form in the form of the deity, because it's so much simpler. One has to be so much less qualified to actually focus one's consciousness upon the Lord. Another interesting. So Prabhupada makes these points over and over again. We'll continue reading the purport a little further. Another significant word in this verse is Punya Sloka Yashakaram. The devotee is called Punya Sloka. As one becomes purified by chanting the holy name of the Lord, So one can become purified simply by chanting the name of a holy devotee. The pure devotee of the Lord and the Lord himself are none different. It is sometimes feasible to chant the name of a holy devotee. This is a very sanctified process. Lord Chaitanya was once chanting the holy name of the gopis when his students criticized him. Why are you chanting the names of the gopis? Why not Krishna? Lord Chaitanya was irritated by the criticism, and so there was some misunderstanding between him and the student and his students. Mahaprabhu actually chased them far away. He wanted to chastise them for desiring to instruct him on the transcendental process of chanting. The beauty of the Lord is that the devotees who are connected with his activities are also glorified. Arjuna, Prahlad, Janaka Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, and many other devotees were not even in the renounced order of life, but were householders. Some of them, such as Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, were born of demoniac families. Prahlad Maharaj's father was a demon, and Bali Maharaj was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, but still they have become famous because of their association with the Lord. Anyone who is eternally associated with the Lord is glorified with the Lord. The conclusion is that a perfect yogi should always be accustomed to seeing the form of the Lord, and unless the mind is fixed in that way, he should continue practicing yoga. So in other words, if one comes up to the point of mystic powers, he can do so many things, that is not the perfection of yoga. It is a step that one has to go beyond. And if one even achieves oneness with the Lord, impersonal seeing the all-pervadingness of the Lord, that is still not the perfection of yoga. One has to go beyond that. But one should continue practicing until one can just simply focus his mind on nothing else except this beautiful personality of Godhead, Krishna. Text 19. Thus, always merged in devotional service, the yogi visualizes the Lord standing, moving, lying down, or sitting within him. For the pastimes of the Supreme Lord are always beautiful and attractive. Prabhupada's purport. The process of meditating on the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within oneself and the process of chanting the glories and pastimes of the Lord are the same. The only difference is that hearing and fixing the mind on the pastimes of the Lord is easier than visualizing the form of the Lord within one's heart. Because as soon as one begins to think of the Lord, especially in this age, the mind becomes disturbed. And due to so much agitation, the process of seeing the Lord within the mind is interrupted. When there is a sound vibration praising the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, however, one is forced to hear. That hearing process enters into the mind, and the practice of yoga is automatically performed. For example, even a child can hear and derive the benefit of meditating on the pastimes of the Lord simply by listening to a reading from the Bhagavatam that describes the Lord as he is going to the pasturing ground with his cows and friends. Hearing includes applying the mind. In this age of Kali, Lord Chaitanya has recommended that one should always engage in chanting and hearing Bhagavad Gita. The Lord also says that the Mahatmas, or great souls, always engage in the process of chanting the glories of the Lord, and just by hearing, others derive the same benefit. Yoga necessitates meditation on the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, whether he is standing, moving, lying down, etc. So how should one meditate on the Lord? Kapila Muni will now give those instructions. So here is what we should fix our mind on, this beautiful form of the Lord. In fixing his mind, text 20:20. In fixing his mind on the eternal form of the Lord, the yogi should not take a collective view of all his limbs, but should fix the mind on each individual limb of the Lord. And the reason is, in other words, one shouldn't just think of the Lord as the whole form of the Lord when doing this type of yogic meditation, because there's a tendency towards impersonalism in that way, because each of the limbs of the Lord is individually beautiful, so one should meditate upon them, and each one has significance, as that will be described. So one should meditate upon the Lord from the lotus feet upward. So, text 21. The devotee should first concentrate his mind on the Lord's lotus feet, which are adorned with the marks of a thunderbolt, a goad — a goad is the instrument used for controlling an elephant — a banner, a flag, and a lotus. The splendor of their beautiful ruby nails resembles the orbit of the moon, meaning the effulgence around the moon, and dispels the thick gloom of one's heart. So one should meditate upon the effulgence emanating from the ruby or reddish toenails of the Lord. And like the moon, at night when you look at the moon, there is a white effulgence around it, a brilliance around it. So similarly, there is that type of effulgence around the lotus toenails of the Lord. They are red. And that, meditating upon that, they are so splendid, then the thick gloom that is around one's heart becomes dispelled. The blessed Lord Shiva becomes all the more blessed by bearing upon his head the holy waters of the Ganges. In case we think, I don't want to look at the feet are the lowest part. But those feet are so wonderful that even Lord Shiva is blessed by carrying upon his head the water that washes those feet. And that water is what? What is it known as? What holy? The Ganga. The Lord's feet act like thunderbolts hurled to shatter the mountains of sin stored in the mind of the meditating devotee. So what is the effect of meditating upon the lotus feet of the Lord? All the sin that is in our heart. Sin is stored in the form of desires, manifest either today or tomorrow. So it's like a thunderbolt hurled against that mountain, shatters to pieces that mountain of sin. One should therefore meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time. In the second paragraph of the purport, Prabhupada says, another significant point of this verse is that the mind of the conditioned soul, on account of its association with the material energy from time immemorial, contains heaps of dirt in the form of desires to lord it over material nature. Heaps, mountains of dirt. This dirt is like a mountain, but a mountain can be shattered when hit by a thunderbolt. Meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord acts like a thunderbolt on the mountain of dirt in the mind of a yogi. If a yogi wants to shatter the mountain of dirt in his mind or his heart, he should concentrate on the lotus feet of the Lord and not imagine something void or impersonal, because the dirt has accumulated like a solid mountain. Mountains are very formidable, very substantial, immovable practically. But because our sin is like that, our tendencies, our desires, materialistic desires are like that, one should meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord. That means also the service of the Lord for a very long time. For one who is accustomed to thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord constantly, however, it is a different matter. So that is really the goal. The devotees are so fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord, they do not think of anything else. Those who practice the yoga system must meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time after following the regulative principles and thereby controlling the senses. So Prabhupada says this is what devotees do. They're constantly fixed upon serving the lotus feet of the Lord and thinking of those wonderful feet with those effulgent toenails. Text 23. The yogi should fix in his heart the activities of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by all demigods and who is the mother of the Supreme Person, Brahma. She can always be found massaging the legs and thighs of the transcendental Lord, very carefully serving him in this way. Because when one thinks of Lakshmi, people think of Lakshmi or fortune and want to possess fortune for themselves. But where is Lakshmi Devi actually situated? She is serving, humbly serving, massaging the lotus feet of the Lord. So that meditation is very healthy, that we should not try to engage Lakshmi in our service, but she is faithful, she is achanchal, she is stita, fixed there. And if we try to get Lakshmi for ourselves, it will cause us trouble. So one should meditate on Lakshmi's service. Next, the yogi should fix his mind in meditation on the personality of Godhead's thighs, the storehouse of all energy. The Lord's thighs are whitish blue, like the luster of the linseed flower, and appear most graceful when the Lord is carried on the shoulders of Garuda. Also, the yogi should contemplate his rounded hips, which are encircled by a girdle that rests on the exquisite yellow silk cloth that extends down to his ankles. Are all the yogis meditating upon him? The yogi should then meditate on his moon-like navel in the center of his abdomen. From his navel, is his navel visible in this picture? No. Can you see where it should be? Where it is? Well, it's there. What's covering it? Chadda. So it is right under that chadda. His moon-like navel in the center of his abdomen. From his navel, which is the foundation of the entire universe, sprang the lotus stem containing all the different planetary systems. The lotus is the residence of Brahma, the first created being. In the same way, the yogi should concentrate his mind on the Lord's nipples, which resemble a pair of most exquisite emeralds and which appear whitish because of the rays of the milk-white pearl necklace adorning his chest. The yogi should then meditate on the chest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the abode of the goddess Mahalakshmi. The Lord's chest is the source of all transcendental pleasure for the mind and the source of full satisfaction for the eyes. The yogi should then imprint on his mind the neck of the Personality of Godhead, who is adored by the entire universe. The neck of the Lord serves to enhance the beauty of the Kaustubha jewel which hangs on his chest. From the end of Prabhupada's purport. The Lord can bestow the blessings of transcendental pleasure upon either the visitor of the temple, the meditator yogi, or one who hears about the Lord's transcendental form from scriptures like the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. There are nine processes for executing devotional service, of which smaranam or meditation is one. Yogis take advantage of the process of smaranam, whereas bhakti yogis take special advantage of the process of hearing and chanting. Text 27. The yogi should further meditate upon the Lord's forearms, which are the source of all the powers of the demigods who control the various functions of material nature. Then the yogi should concentrate on the polished ornaments, which were burnished or polished by Mount Mandara as it revolved. He should also duly contemplate the Lord's discus, the Sudarshan Chakra, which contains 1,000 spokes and a dazzling luster, as well as the conch, which looks like a swan in his lotus-like palm. The yogi should meditate upon his club, Magadha, which is named Komodaki, and which is very dear to him. This club smashes the demons who are always inimical soldiers and is smeared with their blood. And one should concentrate on the nice garland on the neck of the Lord, which is always surrounded by bumblebees with their nice buzzing sound. And one should meditate upon the pearl necklace on the Lord's neck, which is considered to represent the pure living entities who are always engaged in his service. Now, this is, in Prabhupada's purport is very interesting, what he says. But one reason we meditate on the Lord's club smashing the demons is what, very often, what do people meditate on? Their enemies. Why do they meditate on their enemies? And in fact, it describes in the Bhagavatam that when someone hurts us and we become angry at them, that meditation is much stronger than the meditation we have or the thoughts that we have when we have affection for someone. So the meditation on when we are angry is so powerful. When we think someone is our enemy, it's so powerful. And why do we meditate upon them? It's because we want to protect ourselves. We don't want to be hurt by them. I should have said this. Next time he says that, I'll do that. This should happen to him. Like that. So, if we become devotees of Krishna, and actually Krishna himself says in the Mahabharata that that one who is my enemy, one is the enemy of devotees, I take it as he is my enemy as well. So we don't have to meditate on enemies, all we have to do is meditate on Krishna. And what happens to the enemies? Enemies of Krishna? Prabhupada explains in his purport towards the end. Demons are also sons of the personality of Godhead, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. All the different species of living entities are sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are, however, two classes of living entities who act in two different ways. The Supreme Lord keeps on his neck those living entities who are pure, as one protects the jewels and pearls on the bosom and neck of one's body. Those living entities in pure Krishna consciousness are symbolized by the pearls on his neck. How one protects the pearls around one's neck. Those living entities in pure Krishna consciousness are like the pearls on his neck. Those who are demons and are inimical towards the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are punished by his mace, which is always smeared with the blood of such fallen living entities. The club of the Lord is very dear to him, because he uses this instrument to smash the bodies of the demons and mix their blood. As mud is kneaded with water and earth, so the earthly bodies of the enemies of the Lord, or the atheists, are smashed by the club of the Lord, which becomes muddied with the blood of such demons. Now that's something for you to meditate upon. Text 29. The yogi should then meditate on the lotus-like countenance of the Lord, who presents his different forms in this world out of compassion for the anxious devotees. His nose is prominent. The oscillation or the movements of his glittering alligator makar-shaped earrings. So Krishna comes out of his compassion for the devotees. Pritranaya sadanam vinashaya chadiskritam. He comes to smash the devotees, but really, the non-devotees, but the duskritinas, but really he comes to remove the suffering of the devotees caused by separation from their separation from him, and he comes in the just the form that they love the most. Text 30. The yogi then meditates upon the beautiful face of the Lord. So gradually from the feet the meditation rises to the beautiful face of the Lord, which is adorned with curly hair and decorated by lotus-like eyes and dancing eyebrows. A lotus surrounded by swarming bees and a pair of swimming fish would be put to shame by its elegance. A fish, when it swims, it moves, its body moves and curves this way and that way. So similarly, the Lord's eyebrows move and dance like a swimming fish, but more wonderful, elegant. The yogis should contemplate with full devotion the compassionate glances frequently cast by the Lord's eyes, for they soothe the most fearful threefold agonies of his devotees. His glances, accompanied by loving smiles, are full of abundant grace. Here's Prabhupada's purport. As long as one is in conditional life, in the material body, it is natural that he will suffer from anxieties and agonies. One cannot avoid the influence of material energy, even when one is on the transcendental plane. Sometimes disturbances come, but the agonies and anxieties of the devotees are at once mitigated when they think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his beautiful form or the smiling face of the Lord. The Lord bestows innumerable favors upon his devotee, and the greatest manifestation of his grace is his smiling face, which is full of compassion for his pure devotees. So we should fix the beautiful form and the beautiful parts of the Lord's body in our mind, and we should become captivated by him and by them. Text 32. A yogi should similarly meditate upon the most benevolent smile of Lord Sri Hari, a smile which, for all those who bow to him, dries away the ocean of tears caused by intense grief. The yogi should also meditate on the Lord's arched eyebrows, which are manifested by his internal potency in order to charm the sex god for the good of the sages. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The entire universe is full of miseries, and yet I'm thinking I'm going to be happy if I just do this and this around this corner and get this and move this out of the way. But the entire universe is full of miseries, and therefore the inhabitants of this material universe are always shedding tears out of intense grief. There is a great ocean of water made from such tears. But for one who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ocean of tears is at once dried up. One need only see the charming smile of the Supreme Lord. In other words, the bereavement of material existence immediately subsides when one sees the charming smile of the Lord. Now, Prabhupada will say something very interesting about the Lord's arched eyebrows. It is stated in this verse that the charming eyebrows of the Lord are so fascinating that they cause one to forget the charms of sense attraction. The conditioned souls are shackled to material existence because they are captivated by the charms of sense gratification, especially sex life. The sex god is called Makara Dwaj. The charming brows of the Supreme Personality of Godhead protect the sages and devotees from being charmed by material lust and sex attraction. Yamunacharya, a great acharya, said that ever since he had seen the charming pastimes of the Lord, the charms of sex life had become abominable for him, and the mere thought of sex enjoyment would cause him to spit and turn his face. Thus, if anyone wants to be aloof from sex attraction, he must see the charming smile and fascinating eyebrows of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 33. with devotion steeped in love and affection. This is the last verse in purport we'll read tonight. With devotion steeped in love and affection, the yogi should meditate within the core of his heart upon the laughter of Lord Vishnu. The laughter of Vishnu is so captivating that it can be easily meditated upon. When the Supreme Lord is laughing, one can see his small teeth, which resemble jasmine buds rendered rosy by the splendor of his lips. Once devoting his mind to this, the yogi should no longer desire to see anything else. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is recommended that the yogi visualize the laughter of the Lord after studying his smile very carefully. These particular descriptions of meditation on the smile, laughter, face, lips, and teeth all indicate conclusively that God is not impersonal. It is described herein that one should meditate on the laughter or the smiling of Vishnu. There is no other activity that can completely cleanse the heart of the devotee. There is no other activity that can completely cleanse the heart of the devotee. The exceptional beauty of the laughter of Lord Vishnu is that when he smiles, his small teeth, which resembles the buds of jasmine flowers, at once become reddish, reflecting his rosy lips. If the yogi is able to place the beautiful face of the Lord in the core of his heart, he will be completely satisfied. In other words, when one is absorbed in seeing the beauty of the Lord within himself, the material attraction can no longer disturb him. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Why are they? Actually, the Sanskrit is makar, which doesn't quite mean alligator or shark or porpoise or dolphin, but or crocodile. But there's none of them, these makars around. But why does he like those kind of earrings? Makar shaped earrings? Because they're shaped like a makar. That's why. It looks like something like an alligator or a crocodile or a porpoise or a dolphin or a what?
Or a shark.
Or a shark. Something like that. You don't like them? Yeah, well, it's actually the Sanskrit is makar, which isn't quite a shark.
You mentioned about, in the book, what is mentioned as an ocean of tears.
The material world is an ocean of tears.
Is that like an allegory to it?
In one sense, we can say, you mean to say, is there actually an ocean of tears? Well, if you gathered up all the tears of the people suffering, you'd get an ocean. You'd get one, even if you go to different parts of the world today, people being shot and killed, raped in front of their family members, all these things, shot, herded into houses and shot. Horrible, and the family members crying, they're crying, terrified. Yes, the material world is ocean of tears. How many cows killed? They cry. It's relentless. The material world is relentless too. The material energy stalks in each and every one of us like a hired assassin. And good assassin He doesn't let you know that he's stalking. So we tend to forget. But sometimes, out of his mercy, Krishna tips us off that we're being stalked by this assassin of the material energy. So what do we do then? We have to focus, get very, very serious about focusing our attention only in one place. And then that ocean, samasvitamye parapalava plavam mahatpanam punyaya shomarari bhavam buddhya vatsapadam parambadam. That ocean shrinks down, ocean of tears shrinks down into the size of a calf's hoofprint, and then one can easily step across it. Otherwise we will drown in that ocean of tears. Anila, do you want to see the ocean of tears? Huh? Do you want to see it? You have to get a ticket right now. You can go to, there's probably 10 places, so many places, unlimited places in the world you could see it actually. But a few of them are prominent where the people are just killing each other. And and their loved ones crying, they're crying, senselessly being slaughtered. And the ocean of tears rolls one way, and then sometimes it is withdrawn and rolls back the opposite way. Different people crying. But everyone will have their turn. Everyone. Any other questions or comments? You going to talk about the ocean of happiness now?
Just a comment. Say if we were chanting Hare Krishna and I don't know from my experience that I can't see Krishna to that extent. That, what should we do? Should we just keep chanting and
perfect our yoga?
Oh,
the yogis don't see Krishna to this extent either. He wants to go home. The yogis don't see Krishna either until they're perfect. This is very high at the later stages of the yoga practice. This is in the Ashtanga yoga, there's the yam, niyam, and the asanas, and etc. Sometimes it will take lives like that. So similarly for us, we have to practice. But even if we're not very expert in seeing Krishna in the chanting of his names, our mind wanders. We can see Krishna in the form of the deity or in that way, and this meditation should be there. Yeah, is that?
Yeah.
The Prabhupada, many times in the purports, I mentioned it one time, where he explains that the same thing can be done for a person by seeing the beautiful deity form of the Lord. But one has to get one's bhavana right, one's mood right. Because you can be presented, you can be standing right before the deities and be thinking of something completely different. It happens all the time to me. So by hearing about Krishna, by hearing how compassionate he is and seeing how we need help and things like that, our prayers maybe become, and our mind will focus. So, but the central point is to focus the mind on Krishna.
About the
what? Yeah.
I remember in Vrindavan, the Rajasthani farmers, they're very, very simple and poor, but as soon as they walked in the door of the temple, they would bow on the floor. There was a statue in the reception, they would put money there and then go up, and they'd be so full of devotion. The Lord. And then the deli businessmen would go in, and even in front of the deity, there was nose up in the air, he wouldn't give a cent. and that just strut around. And it was a big difference in general, not in every case, but it was a big difference in attitude.
And how more unfortunate still was me, who was there and looking at the deities and not seeing them so many times, thinking about so many other things. Okay, let's stop now. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So tomorrow we'll continue hearing Kapiladev's instructions to Devahuti.